Hello and welcome to this edition of High Vibe Nation. And I've got this amazing guest today, Dr. Karen Perkins. Oh my God, you want to stay tuned because she's got some amazing information to share with us. We'll be right back.
The High Vibe Nation is live. Welcome to the High Vibe Nation. The goal is to raise the vibration of every human being on the planet. Your host on this journey is Sherry Gideon. So let's join her now in her current interview with a high-vibing individual.
Hello and welcome to the High Vibe Nation, the number one positive media show focused on raising the vibe of the planet, a space for you to remember the power within you. And today I would like to welcome Dr. Karen Perkins, who has spent nearly three decades leading successful businesses and individuals to legacy status. The gift that she brings is in the process. And she guides each person through the blending of money, time, productivity, growth, and relationships to create their own unique recipe for success, which leads to more time, more money, and less stress. I am so excited to welcome Dr. Karen Perkins onto the show, who has cracked the code of taking care of our thoughts, emotions, beliefs, and behaviors so that we can take control of our own destiny. And I'd like to welcome Dr. Karen Perkins.
Woo! Hello, hello. I am so excited to be with you today, Sherry. You are just an amazing individual, and I am honored to be here with you.
I am so grateful to have you here. And I mean, I love the topic that you're going to be talking about and just everything about how to really hone in on, you know, the power that each of us has and that we have the choice. So I can't wait to get into it. But I first want to ask you, what does it mean to be high vibe to you?
To be high vibe to me is to live your legacy. And to live your legacy, you decide what's important to you. I've got that beautiful light there. What's important to you? And you're like, I'm an angel.
I know, you're bright.
I'm in a new location and I'm not used to the backdrop yet. High vibe to me is really knowing what it is that you want in life, not what you thought you wanted, not what somebody told you you wanted, but your true core value. And living your life every day toward that and looking for the choices that you can make to have a happier life.
Yeah. And don't you think that each and every one of us has a legacy? We have I'm a believer that we have a blueprint, that we've all come here and we've just forgotten why we came, because we all have this individualized blueprint of greatness. And so when you talk about legacy, what do you mean by that?
It is our blueprint, and it's how people think of us, and it's how they remember us. You know, my sister always said, legacy is, well, an inheritance is what you leave for other people. A legacy is what you leave in other people. And a lot of us work and work and work, and we do things so we can leave an inheritance or a legacy 100 years, 50 years, 20 years from now. But we don't stop and live that every day. I mean, it's nice that I want to be remembered as somebody who loved everybody, but wouldn't it be better for everybody to know now that I love them and that I love everybody? And, you know, when was the last time you stopped and wrote a love letter to a friend or family member? Or just send them a card to say, I was thinking about you and I want you to know that you mean the world to me. We get so busy in the day to day that we don't live our legacy. And that's what to me is one of the most vital things that we can do, is know what our core value is, plan our blueprint according to that core value, and then wake up every morning. My friend Susan says it this way, forgive me. She says, wake up every morning feeling as if you've just had the best sex of your life. Like,
I love it.
Yeah. But, you know, how many of us wake up in the morning that way? Or do we wake up going, oh, just five more minutes. And, you know, I love a friend of mine. She used to say, why do people turn on alarm clocks? Because it startles you. And I took her advice and I've done various songs. And right now, my wake up alarm is the Happy Song. Mm-hmm. So I wake up to, you know, might be crazy what I'm about to say. And so when I wake up, I'm automatically happy because I have programmed myself the second I hear that to say, I am happy. So it's, you know, your mind's an amazing thing. We can program it to do all kinds of things. And I wanted to share one quick thing before we get really into the topic.
Yes.
Our thoughts literally can control our very genetic makeup. It can change our genetic makeup. Not just the chemistry, but the actual genes in our system. And people will tell you all the time, you know, what you think is what you are. Well, you know what? It's true. Mm-hmm. And with the emotional intelligence being an expert there, people are like, well, I can't control my emotions. Maybe, maybe not, but you can control your thoughts. And it's your thoughts that create those emotions, because your thoughts flow through the amygdala, that little tiny pinhead right here, throws through the amygdala. The amygdala assigns it its emotion and physical reaction. And then you react and do what you're going to do. You have that emotion. Well, if I say, gosh, I don't feel really great right now, and I say, what am I thinking? What am I doing? I can say, I'm not going to think and do that. Let me change and do something else and focus on something else. Or if I say, wow, I really feel great. What am I thinking? What am I doing? Well, I better do more of it because I really like feeling this way. And, you know, everything we do in life is a choice. We choose. And we have bad things happen to us, and we can have a heavy heart and still choose to be happy.
So true. Thank you for being on the show, Mikey. Love having you here as always. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, Mikey's an amazing friend. He's just so supportive. So yay for Mikey. But yeah, no, I love what you shared, because that's very much what I'm into too, is you know, understanding the neural pathways and how we can and we can strengthen and develop those neural pathways to where, like you said, in these choices that we make. So the more aware we are of our feelings and what's going on in relationship to our thoughts, we can ultimately choose a different thought. We can choose a different feeling. And so when you talk about emotional intelligence, people who don't know what emotional intelligence is, because there's a lot of people out there that are just really opening up to wanting to understand about this kind of stuff. So tell us a little bit about what is emotional intelligence.
Well, to me, emotional intelligence is understanding. This is the Karen, not the real definition, the Karen definition. It's knowing the logic behind emotion and the emotion behind logic, because you can't have one without the other. And it's learning to take control of those emotions and that logic and propel yourself forward with them. Have those emotions, feel them fully, and then process them and then use them to move yourself forward. You know, we were talking about the thoughts and making choices years ago, and I've slipped into the habit a couple of times, but I'm much better now. Years ago, I'd get to work freaked out, frustrated, because everybody drives like a moron. Have you ever noticed that? It's like, and one day I'm getting on the freeway, and you know, we do this, I'm driving along, and I look over my shoulder, I look, you know, in the rearview mirror, make sure nobody's there, and I go to change lanes, and what happens? Somebody honks, and they wave at me with one finger, and I didn't see them. They were in my blind spot. And I'm horrified. I'm so embarrassed. I hurry back in my own lane, and I'm going, I'm sorry. Oh, fingers and thumb. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I mean, I really was embarrassed. And if it hadn't happened as quickly as it had, I don't know that I would have had my mental shift. Mm. 30 seconds later, some moron cut me off. And as I'm going, idiot, moron, who taught you how to drive? I went, oh, I'll bet they're as embarrassed as I just was. And I instantly had a mental shift. From that point forward, I'd slow down. I'd let people in. I was more calm and relaxed. I saw more things that were going on the freeway because I wasn't all tense wondering who was out to get me. And they weren't out to get me. And, you know, if they did it on purpose, I would say, oh, how embarrassing to be them. Elsewise, I would just say, oh, how embarrassing, and slow down and let them in. That to me is emotional intelligence. Hmm. Understanding how that emotion sets you in motion, and because emotions are energy in motion. What motion does it set you into that creates your outcome, that creates what it is you do the rest of the day, how you feel at that moment, how you make other people feel, how you interact, what reality becomes a reality to you, even if it's not really a reality.
So I love the way that you describe that, because for me, I have had the most amazing mentor for over 20 years. And one of the things that, I mean, we talk about neuropathways and really strengthening that awareness, like you just described. For myself, my mentor always said that we are all one, that we're all individualized expressions of this great infinite power. And so when that person cuts me off and I want to be over here all raging out and saying that no good, you know what, you cut me off. But she says, in reality, you're seeing the face of God. You're seeing the face of the infinite. And so as she would bring this up more and more to me over the years, more and more, instead of, you know, wanting to react and respond from that, you know, that behavior, I would recognize in the moment when I was gonna go there, and I would catch myself and I would have this conversation with myself about what you just described.
Right. And it really is, the one law of the universe is energy. Mm-hmm. And we all live in that energy, as your mentor said, as one.
Yeah.
And though your opinion of me does not determine my eternal salvation, and your behavior does not determine my eternal salvation, because I always have my choice in how I'm going to react, how I'm going to behave, how I'm going to believe. However, I do have to make different choices sometimes because of other people's behaviors and thoughts. And, you know, one of the big things is understanding the personalities. And what somebody does that is perfectly kind and nice to one person is totally offensive to another, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And when we stop and say, I don't really believe people are out to get me. Now, are there some people who are just mean? Mm-hmm. And there's some people who find great joy in it. How embarrassing to be them. How embarrassing to be them, for them. You know, there's nothing I can do to make them a nicer person. But I can decide not to allow it to determine my next step. So I act instead of react.
Right. Absolutely. And do you think that a lot of these behaviors or these ways that people react, does that have a lot to do with people not being aware what their core values are? Or, I mean, does that come into play with it?
It really does. At least I believe it does. Because, well, if we're not aligned with our core values, subconsciously, if not consciously, we feel like we're off. And when we feel like we're off, we're always afraid of falling or tripping. And so we're more sensitive to the things that are said and done around us. And we begin to almost become paranoid. And, you know, it sounds like this big conspiracy in our mind, but really, our mind is very, very protective. And if you believe something, it will find a way to make it true. It will find a way to support what you want to believe. And so if subconsciously I feel off, and everything seems to be going right, I start looking for, well, who must be sarcastic? who must be just saying that to, you know, they're undermining. It's a double-edged, waiting for the other shoe to drop. When in reality, everything's fine and beautiful. And if it's not, it's not, you know. I can't change what is. I can change what will be. Mm-hmm. I can change what will be. And I actually can change what is, because it's all in my perspective. And that comes back down to your emotional intelligence. Our perspectives are all based off of our experiences in life, our own personal experiences. And it's one of those, what experience do I want to choose to live by? And what experience do I want to think differently about?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we all have our choice to be happy or not.
Well, absolutely. So do you think that people really can change their thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. It's mm-hmm. just like that driving. That's a true story. And until I married my new husband, my good husband, until I married Darwin, I went, oh, I don't know, 15, 20 years, not upset about anybody on the freeway. And it was really interesting to me because he would go, really? And I would just, it would hurt. I mean, just, it was painful. And it's not that he's bad. It's just was something he hadn't changed his viewpoint on yet. And I found that because I had chosen to change my viewpoint, it was really unnatural for me to think negatively. More of it, like I said, it was like, oh, how embarrassing to be them. Wow, I hope they get where they need to go because they're driving kind of crazy and I don't want them to get hurt. Hope they don't hurt anyone else, but you know, oh well. Mm-hmm. It's their choice. And those people who say, oh, I'm going to drive in the passing lane 5 miles under the speed limit to keep everyone else from speeding. That's not my job and responsibility. You know, that's not my job and responsibility. Now, the people that do, bless their hearts. You know, they're doing their best to support the world and to make world a safer place. But by taking other people's choices, so to say, away, is not making the world a safer place. Typically, you're encouraging road rage more. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those catch-22s. Now, do I hate the people driving the passing lane slow? Yeah, if I don't like it, get in a different lane. It really isn't going to change my eternal salvation.
Right, right. And so when it comes to choice, I know you love this topic and you love helping people to really identify about how their choice is so powerful. Can you share with us, how do you guide people through their choices? How do you help people to first be aware of that every choice is creating an experience and then go from there?
Well, first I have people follow the RAFPU. We have at least 10 emotions at any given moment. At any given moment, everything we do is emotionally based. And everything. Our logic is emotionally based. Our buying habits, what we wore today. You know, why did you wear what you're wearing? Well, I wanted to be comfortable. Okay, so you wanted to feel comfortable. I wanted to be socially acceptable. You know, I wanted to look good. It all comes down to I want, which is an emotion. RAFPU is, first you got to recognize I am having an emotion. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm having one. And then acknowledge, and this is the emotion I'm having. And even anger is good if you use it as a tool and not a weapon. Mothers Against Drunk Drivers were angry. They used it as a tool to motivate themselves forward. John Walsh gets angry every week, but look at the good he does with it, you know. But you recognize I'm having an emotion. You acknowledge what emotion it is and how you're behaving with it. And then you have to go ahead and allow yourself to feel it. Feel it and feel it fully. If you're happy, giggle and laugh until you start to snort or cry. If you're sad, cry. If you're upset or angry, scream, yell. Don't hit anybody else. Go get one of those punching bags or those little Weebles Wobble, but they don't fall down clown.
I remember those.
I don't care. You know, get something, but just feel it and allow yourself to feel it. Because what we do is we stuff our emotions. We pretend we don't have them. We put them on the shelf to revisit later. And there are times when that actually is the best thing to do momentarily. But when you stuff your emotions, it actually attacks various parts of your body. And they get trapped within us psychologically and physically. And so you've got to feel that emotion, because it's not until you've allowed yourself to fully feel that emotion that you can now process it. And now that you can process that emotion, now you put yourself in a position to use it or diffuse it. You have two choices. You can use it to motivate yourself to do something different. If somebody's angered you, you can use it to communicate better. You can use it to have an open dialogue. You can use it to move yourself from the situation. Or you can defuse it and say, you know what? It doesn't matter enough to me to worry about it. I'm going to let it go. So you do something about it or you let it go. And most people want to take the third option, which is not really a choice. And that is whine about it over and over. Okay, you've not used it or diffused it. What you've done is you've trapped yourself in that. And it grows. That which we focus on grows and expands. And, you know, a fun example of, well, it's not an example, let's say that. An example of one of my greatest mentors. And, you know, they had every, They had every right, according to some, I've just had the technical day. They had every right, according to many, to have a bad attitude, to feel picked on, to feel whiny. But they chose to be happy. It was my little sister, Heather, best mentor ever. And all Heather wanted to do was grow up, get married, and have lots and lots of babies. Well, she grew up. She got married right out of high school, like 2 weeks later. But she didn't have lots of babies. She had no problem getting pregnant. But she had a problem carrying a child to term because of some things that had happened in her youth and a medical condition. In the first 5 years she was married, she had 11 miscarriages.
Wow.
Now, I was beside myself. And every time it would happen, I'd just say, that is so unfair. You were so nice and so kind. And how dare God and the universe and whomever else punish you. And she'd go, Karen, I choose to be happy. I have a heavy heart. Yes, I want a child more than anything. But I choose to be happy. I acknowledge that my heart is heavy. I acknowledge I am sad that I've lost this child. I acknowledge that it hurts. I acknowledge that it pains me. But I choose to be happy. During those 5 years, she spent her time writing love letters to her friends and family, writing children's songs, poems, and books, studying more about her condition so she could help others who might have to face it as well. Well, finally, she got pregnant with little Michael Ryan. Cutest little kid you've ever seen. Well, she gets pregnant with Michael, but lo and behold, she has complications, so she ends up in bed with her pregnancy. Hmm. Now, I ended up in bed with my last pregnancy, and let me tell you, you are bored, you are lonely, you are uncomfortable, and by darn, those floors need vacuum, and nobody can vacuum them as good as I can. So I go over to her place and I said, oh, you poor thing. You're going to be so bored. You're going to be so lonely. You're going to be so uncomfortable. She went, whoa. Focusing on that is not going to make it any more comfortable. Whining about the bed isn't going to make the bed better. If I'm uncomfortable, I need to fluff up pillows, get a different bed, or just do something else to focus my mind somewhere else than my discomfort. She says, I choose to be happy. I'm grateful. I'm at the point where I need to be in bed. And she spent the time she was in bed writing love letters to her friends and family, children, songs, poems, and books, calling other people saying, hey, I'm in bed anyway. Anything I can look up for you? She wasn't bored and lonely like I was, because people actually wanted to go see her. Go figure. Wow. Her life was different. She chose to be happy. Well, finally, Michael was born, but he was 1 month early exactly to the due date. And so he ends up in NICU. And, you know, there he is in that little incubator. And I am furious with God, the universe, and everyone else going, this is before I had my shift in life. I was just, and I said, it is so unfair. You've been good to everybody. You stayed in bed. You ate right. You did everything you're supposed to do. Blah, 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 blah. And she went, whoa, Karen, I choose to be happy. I choose to love Michael now. Not when he gets better. I choose to focus on what I have at this moment and be grateful for it. Because me stressing about Michael being in the incubator is not going to help him heal. Right. He will feel my stress and it will hinder his growth and his healing. I choose to love my son this very moment forward. And so she stayed in the hospital with him and played with him in the incubator, you know, little gloves. And when he was sleeping, she'd go to NICU or to, excuse me, to the pediatrics or to geriatrics and read them stories. She wrote love letters to her friends and families, scrapbooking. She had three scrapbooks done for Michael before he turned 1 month old. My youngest is in his mid-30s, and I've not yet started his. What's wrong with that picture? The day before Michael turned 1 month old, she really did. She had three scrapbooks done. Well, on his 1 month birthday, the day he was actually due, my parents had driven up. They lived 4.5 hours away, but my dad's health was poor. And so they would come up to the VA hospital, which is where we were living by there. So they drove up the 4.5 hours and they were going to take Heather and Michael home for several months so that dad could really get to know Michael because his health really was failing. And so everybody's all excited and mom and dad come up and Heather and Mick get in the car and they're going up through the canyon to my brother's where my parents are. When a gal decided to pass on a blind curb while speeding.
Wow.
Killed Heather and Michael instantly.
How old was Michael?
1 month.
Oh my God.
Now I don't tell you this to shock or upset you. I tell you this because here is a young woman in her mid to late 20s who lived a full, happy life because she chose to be happy. She had every reason to not be happy. Every reason everybody else uses is their excuse why I can't be nice to other people. She lived a full, happy life by choice. That was on a Sunday. Monday morning when my mail came, there was a little pink card with a chocolate smudge on it because she liked chocolate. And it was a love letter. I got my final love letter from her the day after she was killed.
Wow.
Because she chose to live her legacy. Her desire and her legacy was to leave a legacy of love, learning, and family values. And all of us knew she loved us always. She was constantly learning and teaching other people and helping others. And she was just the epitome of family values. She chose to be happy. She lived her legacy every single day. It was her choice. She didn't pretend everything was all jelly beans and flowers. She knew that things were sad and were heavy-hearted and were painful. But she chose to be happy and to move forward in that stream. And because of that, she didn't wait until Michael got out of the hospital. She had a whole month of loving him fully on earth because she chose to. But what kind of choices are we making every day? We have that option. When somebody upsets us, do we choose to love them anyway? Or do we choose to get upset? I tell you what, I'm not perfect. I got upset at my husband earlier today. And he didn't even do anything wrong. I was frustrated and, you know, something innocent. It's like, ah! And then I stop myself and say, okay, is this really how I want to feel? I'm intelligent enough to know, and everyone is intelligent enough to know, if they do or don't want to feel bad. And you know what? Someday some people just do want to feel bad. They've earned it, and by darn, I'm going to be angry today because I've earned it.
Yeah.
Well, don't get stuck there because it will come back and bite you in the butt.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you talk about everything being energy, and you talk about, you know, the when living in the moment and choice is so important, because I mean, really, it's all about milking the joy out of today. And then you have people who their habit, like they fill up when we talk about energy, they fill up on negativity. They fill up in, you know, okay, so you grew up with parents that screamed and yelled and fought. You grew up with an environment of drugs and alcohol. And you're saying that you can't ever change because that's just the way things are. And then you're telling us that your sister, and even, I mean, even the story you told brought back so much awareness of my own journey. Because, for example, one of my twins was born without a throat, and she was born with all kinds of congenital issues. And I was faced with the same situation. And in my situation, you know, I use what's called affirmative prayer. And so I began to speak my word and declare my word that everything was whole, perfect, and complete, that anything that was demonstrating, you know, that was not of that nature was eradicated and removed. So I began to speak my word because my belief had developed within me, knowing that there was only one source, one presence. But then, you know, a week later, I have a massive heart attack, and they tell me I'm going to die in 6 months without a heart transplant. This is 1 week after delivery. Same thing. I mean, I looked at the appearance, but I had made the same sort of choices that you're talking about. But I had developed that. I had that inner willingness and that desire to grow as a person, to be the best person I could be, to leave this legacy like you're talking about. What about people who they'll come up with every single excuse as to why they can't change and why they want to be like that? How do you deal with people or help them shift their thinking?
I have so many great mentors in my life. I had a great boss and mentor. And one of his sayings was GOI, G-O-I, GOI. And we had a young lady in the office that was, just whined about everything and was bitter and mean and it was hard to be around her.
Right.
And she would always use her dad as abusive as her excuse for why she was the way she was.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Robert came out to one day to her. She was one of the receptionists. And he said, you know, we can't have you living like this. We can't have you the face of the company because you're what people see or talk to first. You've got to go and confront your father and get over this. And she says, well, I can't. And he said, well, why not? Because he died 10 years ago. Mm. And he went, whoa, wait a minute. You mean to tell me he has been dead for 10 years and you have allowed him to reach up out of the grave and to victimize you over and over again, even though he's gone and he physically cannot victimize you anymore? And she went, well, but he, and he said, no, you're victimizing yourself by your choice. And he said, I'm sorry. I want you to take the next 2 weeks off. You can take it with pay. Get over it. Do whatever you have to do. But you need to let this go because you are living as a victim by your own choosing. I mean, we were all just going,
right.
And it was one of those, I can't believe he just talked to her like that because he was just the nicest, most mellow man.
Mm.
Well, 2 weeks later, she came back and she was a different person. And we got talking and what happened? She says, well, you know, I went to the grave. I spit on it. I kicked at it. She says, I threw dirt around. I took a boulder and smashed it on his headstone and called him names and told him all the things I thought. And then I realized that he wasn't even there and it didn't matter. And she says, all of a sudden I felt at peace. Mm. And that's what she had to do. So there's been more than once that I've looked at somebody and I've gone, Goy. Goy. And I'm not saying pretend it didn't happen. You got to process it. You got to move through it. Feel it. Just don't live in it. Two examples. I have a family member who horribly and painfully and sadly was raped as a young teenager, brutally raped, somebody who had gotten into the home during the night. And I mean, it was just hideous, horrible, horrible, horrible. And my heart will always go out to her because of this. But she's chose to wear that as her badge of honor. Well, I was raped. Well, I was hurt. Well, I was abused. So I can be mean. So I can be ugly. So I can call people names. So I can be abusive emotionally and verbally. She wears it as a badge. And it just breaks my heart because she's abusing herself. She's victimizing herself. Yes, she was victimized. And you can't take that back. But you can live in that, or you can say, that really was a horrible experience. I hope to never go through it again. I hope nobody else has to go through it. What can I do to help me propel forward because of it or in spite of it? On the opposite hand, though, I have a very dear, dear friend. My best friend ever. And I had known her probably 15 years before I found out any of this information. She was sexually abused by most of her mom's boyfriends. There were several children in the house, and they went to school, came home, were locked in their bedroom, and would get, I don't remember if there was five or six of them, they would get one, if they were lucky, two peanut butter sandwiches shoved under the door. Wow. They were not allowed out of their room until it's time to go to school the next day. We're talking bathroom. We're talking bathing. We're talking, okay, they're living in their own filth. Her mom kicked her out of her home when she was 14 because her mom's boyfriend took a liking to her more than her mom, and her mom was jealous. She had nowhere to go, nowhere to live. And she found a wonderful person who let her live in the back room of the store, of their family store. And even though she was 14, just clean up around the shop, at, you know, sweep up and stuff, and you can live there for free. And he made sure she had food. Well, you can imagine, if you're not allowed to eat but a peanut butter sandwich or two a night between five of you, these kids are stealing food out of garbage cans. Doing anything they can do. She is the sweetest, happiest, joyous person I have ever known. Ever. I had no idea that was her childhood.
Wow.
Because she chose not to make that who she was. She was not her circumstances. She was who she wanted to be within, and became that within and without. And honestly, I knew her for years and years and years before I had any idea any of that had ever happened. Any idea. And it wasn't that she kept her life secret. It just didn't come up because it wasn't important.
Right.
And now, what's the difference between those two?
Right.
Yes, my family member had something horrible happen. It was bad. I'm not going to say it wasn't. And my friend had something as horrible, and in my mind, even more so, because it was continuous and there were many, many layers of it. Happy, miserable, happy, miserable. Wants to bring others up and make them happy, wants to bring others down and make them as miserable as they are. They both have a choice. We are not our circumstances. We are not other people's behaviors. We are who we choose to be. We live the life we choose to live. Yes, I may not have money one day. Yes, I may get sick and be given a 27% chance of living. I want to stop right there. I do, like you, got sick. I had a PICC line, and I didn't know how sick I was until the insurance company called, because they had to call every day to make sure I was still alive, because I had a 73% chance of dying. And I called the doctor. I said, what? And he went, So I didn't bother saying anything because I knew that wouldn't matter to you. You know, you're just going to be fine. But as I tell people the story, I have to stop and remember that people said 73% chance of dying, because I always said I have a 27% chance of living. That's 26% more than I need. It's 26% more. But I focus on living, 27% chance of living, instead of chances of dying.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's a choice.
Yep.
Goes back to the neuro-linguistic programming.
Yep.
And it's our choice. And I lived, obviously. I have had near-death experiences. I have no idea how many times now. Half a dozen times. I have a son that we tease about having, you know, more lives than 12 cats combined. But we always say he's going to be fine because he knows he will be. Now, one day, will I die? Mm-hmm. Am I afraid of dying? No. Do I try and live my legacy every day so that when it happens, I don't go, oh, I wish I had just.
Right. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Now, I know that you've written a book, and your book is called Emotional Power. Tell us about, you know, where did the book come from, and how did you lay out the book in a way that it really helps people address a lot of these things that you've been sharing with us?
You know, it's kind of a funny story. I was an adjunct professor, did seminars for, oh gosh, man, I'm getting old, for about 20 years. I was in a different city and state 4 or 5 days a week, 3 and 4 weeks a month.
Wow.
And emotional intelligence was one of the things that I focused a lot on dealing with difficult people. And by the way, if any one of you ever get sent to a deal with the difficult people seminar to deal with the people in your office, they're not the difficult one. They sent you because you are. Keep that in mind. And most of the time, it's not that we're difficult. We're just different and we have misunderstandings. But I have spent a lot of time doing that and talking about it. And somebody said to me one day, man, if I could just take all of the stuff that you know about it and just record you and listen to it, it just would be wonderful. And I went, huh, what a great idea. So I took my notes that I had used for my different courses and my different seminars and got into the recording studio and had my post-its on the wall, and I just talked for a couple of days. And then we went back and did some editing, and it became the bestseller for the seminar group that I was with. They asked to then purchase it, and we modified it to meet their needs. I kept the title and my intellectual property, and then I decided, you know what, it's time to turn it into a book. So we took it, we updated it, and we turned it into a book. And people, they laugh. Those that know me well laugh when they read it because they say, I can just hear you saying that. Because it's written like I speak. It's not grammatically correct. It's written the way I speak, yet it still does cover the science and the logic behind emotion and the emotion behind logic. And the people who love my book the most, or that are... My ear doesn't like this. The people who seem to like it the most, can you still hear me?
Yep.
Okay, there. Are actually executive men, because they've been told their whole lives to stuff it, to don't show emotions. You're weak if you have emotions. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, just completely the opposite. You know, you got emotions and you can work through them and display them and acknowledge them. Man, you are a person of power and strength. Hmm. And so that's where it all came from. And I there's dozens and dozens and dozens of true stories. Some are mine, some are family members, some are my friends' stories that they've allowed me to share. But I like to do a lot of story-based examples because for me, it's easier to go, oh, I see that now. Right. I see that. I'm not a real good textbook reader. And anyway, so it's one of my favorite. I've written several books, but I have to say that Emotional Power is my favorite child. We don't have favorite children. We have favorite children for specific things.
So how can people get a hold of that book?
Well, you know, we just changed publishers. And so it might still be able to get it on Amazon, but we're getting a new edition of it back onto Amazon here in a couple of weeks. Or they can go ahead and go to my website, drkarenperkins.com, drkarenperkins.com, or they can email me, karen@drkarenperkins.com. If they want to email me, I can get them the book, and or you know, they can buy the book from me, and I'll send them the ebook and the audio book as well, because you can't get either one of those anywhere but for me. So that's how they can get it.
Love it. Oh my God. Awesome. So tell me, what would be the next step for someone who wants to take control of their destiny and live their legacy?
Well, contact me. You're like, really, Karen? Seriously, it is, find out what your core value is, and don't just sit down and say, I wonder what my core value is. You almost have to be tricked into finding it. And that is where I say, call me, because I have a, people say it's manipulative, it's a trick. I have a way of helping you find your core value without you realizing that's what you're doing. And then afterwards you go, oh yeah, that really is my true core value. Because a lot of us get hung up in what we think should be or what others have told us it is instead of what it truly is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if not me, find somebody, sit with them, and any coach, any mentor that knows about NLP, that knows about psychology. You know this, I'm a certified hypnotherapist as well. So, you know, all of those different things, and I don't hypnotize you into finding out what it is. There's an activity that we do, but get a coach, get a mentor, get somebody that you can work with to find out what your true core value is. And then once you find out what your true core value is, come up with your blueprint and live toward that core value. And if it's not going to benefit that, leave it alone. It's like Heather, if it didn't have anything to do with love, learning, or family values, she didn't worry about it. If it did, she was all over it. Mm-hmm. And if it was contrary, she avoided it like the plague. If it had nothing one way or the other, she felt like she didn't, she didn't, she didn't. But if it was consistent, she was on it. It was contrary, she pushed it away, she repelled it. And I would say, first thing to do, get somebody to work with you on that. Put up the sign. My good friend that said Goy, his daily affirmation that I have used for the years since I met him is, I repel all negativeness of my own and of others. And make that your motto. I repel all negativeness of my own and of others. And then that negativeness will just begin to bounce off of you, because your energy will not allow it in. So
I love what you just said, because I always say what's no longer in alignment with you falls away, because that vibration cannot maintain your vibration. So right. It just goes back to, at the end of the day, to what you've been speaking through this whole conversation about choice. You know, when we choose to continually move forward in momentum through the moments of today, it's almost like going to the gym every day. What do? You strengthen that muscle in your own neural pathways to be and be and be and be from a higher state. And therefore, when you're being from that, you only attract what you are. And so, right. You know, the gift is to, you know, like you said, I mean, just really be in love with the moment, be in love with tapping into joy.
Well, and let go of fear. Fear is the one thing that holds us back. The two core emotions are love and fear.
Yeah.
You know, it's not love and hate. It's love and fear. And fear is false evidence appearing real.
Right.
There is no such thing as fear that's a real thing. It's either a fact or it's false evidence. Mm-hmm. If it's a fact, then you know what you need to do, or you know you need to be doing something different. If it's the unknown, it's false evidence appearing real. It's not a fact. So fear is not a fact.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Karen. I'm so happy that you enjoyed your time with us here on High Vibe Nation, and we'll definitely have to have you back. I love this message. You know, I think that this is a message that people are hungry for now. They're ready for.
Yes. And what you do with your audience and what you do personally, and folks, Sherry can help you through all the things that I told you about. You know, you want somebody to help you find your core values, she's a woman. You're a rock star, an absolute rock star. And bless you for what you do for the world and for helping people find their way and find their voice and to raise their vibration, because it is so vital on a day-to-day, moment-by-moment basis. So honors to you.
Yay, and I receive. Thank you so much. And for those of you who've been watching, you can find Dr. Karen on www.karenperkins.com. You can find her through her email at karen@karenperkins.com. And you can find her on Facebook at Dr. Karen Perkins. So for those of you who support High Vibe Nation Weekly, I want to thank each and every one of you. I absolutely value your support. And of course, share this out with your own audience and friends. And you can find me on thehighvibenation.com, on Instagram at The High Vibe Nation, and on Facebook at The High Vibe Nation. Until next week, everyone, please create an amazing rest of the week. Bye now.
Bye.
From everybody here at the High Vibe Nation, we want to say thank you for choosing to raise your vibration. And of course, please like, share, and subscribe. If you need to find us on the web, check us out at www.the